Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future we all hope for. And every week I get joined by one of the wonderful EV Cafe team, and this week is... No, it's no exception. I was going to say it's an exception, but no, it's not. I've got the lovely John Curtis. Welcome, John.
You silver tongue smoothie, you. Hello.
Well, and this week we are really excited, aren't we, JC, to have an innovator, a pioneer, and a collaborator, all three, I think, in one, in the wonderful Toddington Harper, CEO of the very famous these days GridServe. Welcome, Toddington.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
For those of you on audio, it has to be said that Toddington has the best background that we've ever had on the EV Cafe podcast. So I would encourage you to pop over to YouTube and just see the fish swimming around Toddington's head, or at least that's the way it looks like. But it is quite a impressive background.
It's true. It's a reminder. So I've built a little miniature... miniature coral reef, because at 2 degrees of warming, the unfortunate reality is that 99% of the world's coral reefs cannot survive.
Wow. According
to the IPCC, which is just horrific, and we are on track to massively exceed that. And so my little experimentations of trying to I thought that would be a good reminder, but me trying to maintain 1.5 degrees of warming has been quite traumatic. And so I've had plagues, I've had heating, I've had bleaching, I've had absolutely everything. And so it's really helped me kind of understand how fragile it all really is. I am close to my little fishy friends.
I absolutely love that. And I've experienced that firsthand for myself. Many years ago, I was lucky enough to go to Sharm El Sheikh and experience the Red Sea reefs, which are truly amazing. They are... just off the scale, with the wildlife and the beauty and all of that. And then a few years later, I was on an event with Mercedes-Benz that they took people all around the world, and we went to Mauritius. And Mauritius, that all the reefs around Mauritius are dead. It's as simple as that. They are just as dead as a dodo. The reef goes right out for a mile or so from the shores, and just really, really unbelievably kind of disappointing. And there was only one part of the whole island that had any kind of living reef to speak of. So I can only imagine that this is already very much in play around the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely horrific. And, we talk a lot about climate change as if it's something that's going to happen. And the reality is climate change is happening. And there are places around the world being absolutely devastated. And marine is, there's just so many marine ecosystems, collapsing, on the verge of collapsed, have collapsed. The horrific statistic that the World Wildlife Fund for Nature provide, they do that annual survey of world wildlife. And we've now got to a point where in the last 50 years, we've lost more than 70% of it. It's just horrific. So, and then the 30% that we've got left is not only dealing with the fact that humanity hasn't really changed course, and that's taking a massive hammering. But now, if you can't rely on the climate and ecosystems, then how does that work? And so, it's just really important. And so, having kind of fish in the room with me is just a constant reminder of how important it is, because nature is amazing. And I think the other issue that we have with this world that we live in is that people are so disconnected from nature. People are disconnected from food. It comes in plastic boxes in supermarkets. People are disconnected from nature. It's something that, people might see on the odd David Attenborough film if they can be bothered to get past Netflix. And nature is amazing, like absolutely incredible. But people need to see it. I've got four little girls, and as a result of having this fish tank, you know, I've got certainly one budding enthusiast at the moment, and hopefully more on the way. But they're like, wow, look what's happening. Look at this. This is amazing. And
oh, hold on. Stop press. More kids on the way, did you say?
No, definitely not. So I'm very happy.
Or more fish.
Well, I'm very happy. I've got four little girls.
Todd,
small.
Have you...
And I'm very happy. I have my lot, and I'm over the moon. I do not need to add more children to this planet.
Have you always had this interest in nature? Does this go back to your childhood?
Well, my childhood was an interesting one. So I grew up in the Middle East. I've always had this interest in kind of energy or renewable energy because my father. It's very strange in terms of, you know, like what they named us after, which no doubt you will tease us about, and what they were doing. So my father 60 odd years ago was building petrol stations, and then in the oil crisis realized that wasn't really going to work, and so kind of set off on a journey around the world and discovered renewable energy, ended up building eco homes in the Middle East, discovered solar energy, and then started deploying solar energy and battery solutions across the Middle East. And then I was born while that was happening. And my house was powered by, because he was unfortunately not around anymore. He was a right character and kind of like, you know, a pioneer very much so, and an innovator. And so he would try all this stuff out on our house. And our house was basically run on solar energy and batteries and wind turbines. And so I, from a very early day, well, I thought that's how the world was run because that's all I knew. Mm. And you do get a greater affinity with nature. So like when the wind was blowing, because his electronics was a little quirky, when the wind was blowing, the TV would kind of go a little bit fuzzy, you know, when it was a really windy day. So you could kind of like know, oh, it's windy outside. And, you know, see, I was definitely very connected with energy. I don't know. I think the environment, I suppose, yeah, probably because it was very hot in Bahrain. And so we've spent a lot of time, in the water. It helps. And there was lots of stuff in the water, you know, lots of amazing fish and, you know, crabs and all sorts of funny things. So, you know, so I guess I've kind of been around wildlife, for my life. I do find it just absolutely incredible and have spent, you know, a lot of time doing that. I mean, the last business before GridServe, we had an incredible project where we started turning solar farms into nature sanctuaries to protect species. That was such an amazing thing, and bees and biodiversity. And anyway, so I'm straying, but have I always had it? I don't know, but it's certainly you know in me. You know, I'm on a mission to really help deliver sustainable energy, and I want to really play a massive role in that. Mm. But I also want to play a massive role in protecting nature.
I mean, and that is so fantastic to hear. Just the makeup of the CEO of GridServe, because that can be a very kind of out there kind of title, and people will probably feel, oh, wow, a bit, you know, one of the most powerful charging point operators in the UK. But the question you mentioned, you know, what you're named after, and I wanted to start with this question, but I think we've kind of gone with the fish, which is all good. But you know, for many people asking or listening to this, they will know that there is Toddington Services, and for those of the listeners that don't know, your brother is called Heston. Yes. And in case you didn't know, that's a service station just outside London. In fact, it's the last service station on the M4. And so, which came first?
It's funny.
Toddington and Heston, or Toddington and Heston?
I am the second service station. And it's funny, actually. I suppose it's... We always thought it the first service station on the M4. It depends on, I guess, which way you're looking.
Oh, yeah, first or last. Yeah, yeah.
But that's a funny one. You know, because that was actually how my name came about. So on the way back from the hospital in London, my parents were calling out names on the way back for my brother, and they went past Heston and Heston Services, and they were like, "What a brilliant name!" And I think my mother had kind of visions of, you know, Heston, and you know, probably there was probably Sir Heston in there as well at some point. and thought that's a wonderful name, brilliant. I'm going to go with that. And then when I was born, there was a lady who basically said, if you were to my parents, well, look, if you were, you know, nutty enough effectively to call your firstborn after the first service station on the M1, what about Toddington, the first service on the M4? So what about Toddington, the first service station on the M1? And my mother was like, brilliant. What a great idea. Let's do it. Which is, yeah, quite a thing to do. And then I ended up with Toddington and then Harper, which is a T&H, and they discovered that's basically the two of the three initials of their house, and they wanted a W in the middle. And so the lady who had apparently come up with this cunning plan for Toddington lived in Warwick, and so that is apparently why they gave me Warwick as a middle name, which made very limited sense to me. That was all I got. You know, I'm sure there's lots of questions. Did they? Didn't they? I mean, there's all sorts of questions that I've had it in Watford Gap, and what about this? And what about that?
I've heard
it all. But the funny one for me was when I was on the way to university in Manchester, and I pulled over into a service station. I drove in, and there it was, Warwick Services. I was like, right. That's it. And then the funny thing is these days is that we now have electric vehicle chargers at Heston Services, at Toddington Services, and at Warwick Services, as well as many others, which is kind of extraordinary. And we build electric forecourts, which are kind of like electric, you know, like electric versions of what we're named after. And it's all very odd and circular, and it's also based on solar energy, which was kind of the start of what my father set out to do, you know, and was doing many, many moons ago. So
thank you for such candor. I so appreciate it. It's great.
So let's pick up on that, Heston. So you mentioned GridServ, and you now have these wonderful chargers in the ground. Where did the brainchild for GridServ come from? Was it your idea and you thought, oh, I know, I've come up with this jolly wheeze? Or was it a part of an iterative process and you worked with lots and lots of people and investors and so on to thrash out what problem you were trying to solve?
So
which came first?
So as I mentioned, So I've been building sustainable energy businesses for more than 20 years on a journey of really trying to get the world back into, you know, the sense of, well, what made sense to me when I grew up, that the world was powered by solar energy and batteries, and, you know, it all made sense. And fossil fuels was a very peculiar topic that I learned, that I discovered, you know, geography teacher at school who turned around and said, so how's the world powered and where does energy come from? And I was like, well, that's pretty obvious, isn't it? It comes from solar panels and wind turbines. And he looked at me like I was an absolute alien and was like, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's a weirdo, that guy. Like, it comes from fossil fuels. It comes from, you know, and I was like, what are those things? and then kind of like dug into that topic and discovered that, that is actually how we get the energy. But the more remarkable thing is if you keep looking into it, and this is the thing that people don't really think about very much, because we are kind of told, like I was told by my geography teacher, is that fossil fuels, the energy in fossil fuels comes from the ground. And, you know, actually it doesn't. The energy in fossil fuels was harvested from the sun several hundred million years ago with algae and plants and so on and photosynthesis. At the same time, we took carbon dioxide out of the air in the process of photosynthesis, you know, storing the energy as hydrocarbons. And so the energy came from the sun, happens to be in the ground. And actually, when we use fossil fuels, we release you know, the sun's energy. We're able to use 300 million year old sunlight. But when I discovered that all the kind of environmental challenges and consequences that of and political and all the just all the many, many, you know, concerning issues that relate to this topic, I thought, well, you don't really need to do that. You know, you can just like
take it from source.
You can skip the 300 million years. You can refineries. You can use batteries instead of you know, pipelines and tankers, you can use cables and grids. They're much more efficient. Instead of electric petrol forecourts, you can build electric forecourts and electric hubs. And you can use electric vehicles instead of petrol vehicles. I mean, getting to that point was a voyage of discovery. When I was building Bellectric, I learned how much energy, really, which was at, you know, when you build solar farms, a lot of these construction sites are running on diesel. Ours aren't, just to let you know. But they still are running on biofuels. But it was a pretty horrific statistic to try and work out how much, you know, fuel does it take to build a solar farm. And it's not something that people really talk about a lot. And I just thought, this is all a bit rubbish, isn't it? Surely there's a better way of doing this. And then I got to drive an amazing Tesla, one of the very first ones. And I just thought, this is it. Put a deposit down. Had to sell a solar farm to buy the rest of the car, which was really, really interesting endeavor in itself. And then got this amazing car, and then discovered that it didn't really. It was like a brain without any knowledge. So it looked cool, but it didn't have a Tesla supercharger network. It wasn't really there. It hadn't been built. It didn't have. It was a very early version of a Tesla. It didn't have any. Well, one of my first thoughts was like, when I did, you know, got over how cool it looked and how fast it was, I was like, okay, so does it play music? And I was looking and I was like, oh my God, I've been done. There's no CD player. What the heck? And like, what on earth? I can't believe it. Rubbish. Blah, blah, blah. And then one day it was like, boom, and here's Spotify. And I was like, what? So I went from like not having a CD player, getting quite cross about that, to having every song in the world without, and all I had to do was go to sleep and wake up. And then the same thing happened with charging along the way. About, you know, me with I went to South of France with my incredible wife, who was putting up with my endeavors. This in 2014, in an electric car to South of France and back, because I'd made a commitment at that point. We were going electric. And it was, I enjoyed it. It was like pencil and paper, literally. When do we need to charge? How fast do I need to go to get there? And it was all very, very tight and nearly didn't. And then, you know, and it, eventually she was like, just please stop talking. You're very boring. Like, just like, it was okay for the first like 5 hours, but stop. And anyway, and then I learned over the years that like I didn't have to do that anymore, because the car did it all and worked it all out. And so it was clear to me that electric vehicles were amazing, but that complexity was not for everybody. And if we're going to, really make the transition that we now need to do within the timeframes required to address the climate crisis, then we need to really make this easy, and we need to make it much better than it was. And it was also clear to me that if you didn't have a Tesla, I also learned this because my Tesla was then pinched in lockdown, which was horrific. Horrific. It's a first world problem, but I suddenly woke up and didn't have this amazing car. Other vehicles don't have that, that same ecosystem. So what we are trying to kind of, you know, create is a business that makes it really straightforward and easy and enjoyable and fun. So kind of leave the anxiety at the door, because at the moment, like with EVs, there's all these horrible, you know, often completely untrue stories in newspapers at the moment saying this is terrible and that's terrible and this is terrible. And I don't see that coming from people who drive electric cars. Not really. But you know, we also got to own some of it is true. It's not as easy as it should be or could be. And if people are going to really go at the speed that we need to collectively as humanity to address the climate crisis, then we need to make this easy and awesome, and it also needs to be powered on renewable energy and so on. So it just, like, a lot of learning over a number of years has kind of got us to where we are, but we're also very much at the beginning, still quite early on, and what's coming from GridServe in due course is going to be awesome, and it needs to be, because the challenge, and again, what we are about, we had this extraordinary opportunity as humanity to be living at this very strange moment in time where the science is clear. So the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the world's leading scientists in the UN member states. They've spent 35 years modeling climate science, and they produced in March of this year the synthesis report, which set out their final warning, as they called it, that said, "Oh my goodness, we've already hit about 1.1 to 1.2 degrees of warming. At 1.5, it's getting really bad. It starts becoming irreversible, even if it isn't already. 2 degrees, as we talked about earlier, is really, really bad. And we're currently on a trajectory of well exceeding all of that. And if we want to keep 1.5 alive, then we have to peak global emissions now, but by 2025, at the very, very latest, about, what is that, 13 months from now? And we then need to reduce global emissions by 43% by 2030. So we've got 6 years in like 1 month. And that's the science by the world's leading scientists, irrespective of what you hear in the newspaper and what, you know, vested interests and what might want to make you think or people think to slow things down. The actual science says that. And so what we are trying to do is we're like, oh my goodness, we are born in this era where we have a very, you know, very finite window of time. The future generations who will never have this opportunity again will judge us, and they will say, how well did you respond when the science was clear, when the world's leading scientists issued their final stop warning, you must do this now? Are we going to be the ones that respond or not? And whilst it seems like, how is that even possible? You know, like how is it, you know, we have to do this, don't we? You know, is it not our collective responsibility to throw the kitchen sink at it? And so Grid Server absolutely doing everything we can to be a part of the solution to make it happen. But we're also approaching it pragmatically, that if you need, you know, to deliver so much change, you've got to make it easy and enjoyable and fun. And the great thing is you can do that now, because electric vehicles are great. You know, renewable energy is cheaper than fossil fuels. They're fun. You know, there's like, and if we can make it really, really awesome, really, really easy, and, you know, everyone's going to suddenly switch over because it's great and it's the thing they should do, and they shouldn't wait till 2030 because it's a very long way away and we need to have done an awful lot by then. Anyway, I probably went on to quite a few subjects there, but it was quite a long answer to your question.
Brilliant answer. Thank you.
Truly brilliant answer. I think the one question I'm just kind of mulling on is, which exciting Tesla so early was it? Was it the Model S or was it the Roadster?
It's a very good question. It was the Model S. It was the it was an 85. It was like literally the cheapest Model S that I could afford. I had enough money for the deposit. This is an interesting point, actually, because, like, you know, Grid Server, we've achieved quite a lot thus far. I think it's fair to say we've got a lot more to do, but and none of it was easy, has been easy. I'm very lucky. I have amazing parents and had a good start in life, and a father that believed you could achieve things by getting on with it. And so I was pretty clear that whilst I didn't know how to get that car, if I didn't put a deposit down and commit myself, I wasn't going to get it. But I was also had to be realistic that I was going to go for the base level because that was going to up my chances. It was the first ever, you know, it was a very basic Model S, rear wheel drive, didn't have all the gadgets, but wow. What an amazing thing it was.
Didn't have a radio.
Didn't have a CD player. But in the end, I worked out I wasn't actually ripped off. So
no, that's great.
But Heston, there are 7 Toddington. Billion people in Toddington. The world. Toddington. Why am I saying Heston? Toddington. I even know what...
an awesome brother called Heston. And
he is an awesome, amazing human being, and I'm lucky enough to have spent some time with his incredible brain.
He is awesome. And it
leaves me in the dust. My question is, why you? There are 7 billion of us in the world, and we all like to think that we're making a difference. Paul does, I do. We don't even scratch the surface. Yet you, as another human being, same chromosomes, same DNA, same drive, enthusiasm, all that stuff, you have said, do you know what? I'm going to do this. Why? What is it about you and how you were brought up? Is it your family? Is it that it's inherent in you? Because that's a hell of an ego, thinking I can save the planet, and you can. And that's the thing. I've seen you speak on stage, and you speak as though this is something that is your personal mission to deliver.
I mean, I hope I don't have an ego, like in a bad way, but I mean, I definitely have self-belief. And you know, I think definitely my dad was a really big part of that. And he actually backed me very early on in the days when nobody else did, which was great because he enabled this self-belief to kind of become reality. Otherwise it's just an idea that doesn't do anything. And I was very lucky. I mean, he didn't have huge resources to back me, but he was there. And he was a really incredible sounding board for that. Mm. And, you know, and I knew and I saw, and it was very clear to me about how the future should, you know, how it could work. And when I had a vehicle, I understood how awesome it could be.
That's a long way away from actually delivering what you have. Lots of us see opportunity. We see what could and should happen. But turning that into a reality, bricks and mortar, turning it into the Sun to Wheel program that you have, and speaking as passionately as you do about scale of your operation and the pace of change that's necessary, is far, far more than just coming up with a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think you need desire and persistence, and persistence is really important. You need to believe that what you're doing is the right thing. And if you do believe that you're doing it the right thing, then it's very helpful. Somebody once told me, I think my brother actually, I think he got this from various places that he worked out, and it was something that my dad really kind of reinforced, was this understanding that if you are doing the right thing, then what is really helpful is to understand that no doesn't actually mean no. Mm. It just means you haven't got to yes yet. That's really useful to know. And the other thing that's really useful to know is that it's very unlikely that somebody can give you more than 7 good reasons why not to do something. And and that's very empowering, because like if you've tried to do something 5 times and each time has been hit with a no and a no and a no and a no and a no, like you're like, and you don't, you know, and you don't know that, then you're like quite, you know, down in the dumps. On the other hand, if you now know you've only got 2 more no's until you get a yes, you're like, brilliant, I'm nearly there. I'm getting there. So I think that's really helpful. There's been some incredible books that I've read as well that have been very, very helpful. One of the most amazing books that I ever read is a book called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And you know, the title is a bit kind of misleading. It doesn't need to be rich as in money. It could be rich as in achievement of whatever you want. And it was an incredible thing that actually, when people become very successful, like hugely successful, these, you know, wildly successful people, you see they often become philanthropic and they want to give back. And the most successful, self-made person in the US commissioned a reporter called Napoleon Hill to basically work on a project to interview the most successful self-made people in the world that had ever lived. Henry Ford, Gillette, Thomas Edison, like many others, and ask them the question, how did you do what you did? And he set this chap called Napoleon Hill on this task. This was about 100 years ago or so, maybe not quite that much. The remarkable thing is this task which started took 25 years. So for 25 years, this chap had the door opened to interview like the most successful people that had ever lived, who'd gone kind of from zero to the very, 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 very top, who'd got to the philanthropic level that they wanted to give back and tell people how they'd done and give advice to people along the way. And then he discovered that there was about 12 things that they all had in common, kind of 12 plus one. And they condensed all of that into a book called Think and Go Rich. And it really, it's in the title, it's about think. You know, you don't have to have kind of like, you know, these people didn't start with wealth. They started with a plan and a belief and a desire and persistence. And if you apply that in a certain way, then you increase your odds of being successful. And so I think if people read that, if that was given into schools in the UK, you know, as there's other books as well, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People is very useful. You know, what you say isn't necessarily what people hear. You know, what you think isn't, you know, I think there's a lot, people would fight a lot less if they all read that book and tried to understand, you know, more about other people. Another great book, Who Moved My Cheese? You know, How to Manage Change in the World. We all like struggle with change and like, there's a beauty. But anyway, that book, Think and Grow Rich, was really helpful too, because it helped me understand just reminded me of something else there. That if you have the belief and desire to do it. In fact, my granny, that's what made me twitch just then. My grandmother, she shared some, just she got dementia before she left the planet. And I had a moment with her when she said, turned around and said to me, she said, Toddington, she spoke with American accent. She's like, Todd, I've been around the world, I've seen a lot. And there are some people that that really want to succeed, and I think you're one of them. And she goes, I just want to give you some advice that there will always be people that give you opinions. There will always be people that tell you this is the way to do it, that is the way to do it. You know, everyone will always give you an opinion. But she said, the thing that I've noticed is that the people who make it in life are the people who stick to what they believe is the right thing to do. And she said, and they do it with capital letters. Then she wrote that in a little book that I had, which interestingly, and I'm you know, going all out here, but interestingly, I discovered that book just quite weirdly. When my dad passed away in an accident, I was quite, I felt quite vulnerable, because he was the person that I spoke to when I didn't have the answers, when I didn't, you know, wanted to bounce something off. And then he'd gone and I was like, oh my goodness, now how do I, you know, who do I bounce this off? And then on that same day after the funeral, I opened a drawer, the book popped out with that page from my grandmother. And it said, if, you know, in this situation, just do what you believe is the right thing to do and do it with capital letters. And I was like, wow, thank you, Granny. I'd never had any other conversation with her like that in my entire life. And it was kind of like that belief, that you're doing the right thing and sticking to it is kind of really what helps. And so, and it's quite, again, quite an answer. I possibly didn't expect to your question, but I think that's kind of why. I mean, I have a vision for how it, you know, a better world that could be. I have a practical kind of reality on how this could be delivered. I have this kind of view of the future of people looking back at this time and saying, you knew how, you know, and actually the weird thing about COVID, and I know it was a weird experience, you know, COVID, whoa, COVID, but it actually gave me a lot of hope, because I was getting to a point in COVID that I just, all this stuff was like, you know, I just think it's not possible. And then all of a sudden I saw humanity change in 24 hours.
Yes.
And it just stopped and we changed. We went to home and it literally, in the air, and I heard this, you know, there's an incredible statistic at an event I was at yesterday. The mother who's, you know, was the only, her daughter, I think the only person who died from air pollution. It's horrendous. Mm. Ella Roberta Foundation. Is that right? And she was saying during the lockdown was the only period in the UK where kids had died from asthma. But anyway, during that period, I just like, oh my goodness, it can be done. Because if you think about how quick we responded to the climate crisis, and you think about the fact that the solutions that we need are available, they work, they're available, they're actually awesome. And we as humanity collectively have an opportunity to do something about this than if we were actually, and the future of humanity and mankind and planet Earth and all the animals and everything that lives in it depends on us doing that, according to the world leading scientists, and the future of our businesses. Let's not pretend it doesn't, you know, society, sustainability, prosperity for our collective good, you know, irrespective of which businesses we work in, it depends on us doing the right thing. Then, you know, what I kind of learned with how the world responded to COVID is that actually in that respect, 6 years is quite a long time, you know. So can we reduce emissions by 43% by 2030? Well, if we respond with a level of desire and persistence and impact that the world did then, we'll knock this out of the park. But we need to do that, and certainly GridServe are, and you know, but there's clearly a lot more we will need to do.
And it's incredible, because I think you're absolutely right, and I love the urgency with which you speak, because I think that urgency is so important. And as I've looked back at your life, and do I go forward or do I go back? I'm curious because there's a lot you had a number of companies all running either not quite simultaneously, but you know, they were kind of, it was almost like one took over, mm-hmm. and now GridServe and seems to lead. But something I didn't know about you, and a lot of people will say, you know, hydrogen is the future, right? The hydrogen, 10 years time, it's going to take over the world. And yet you were doing hydrogen some 10, maybe 15 years ago, and you've seen that and have now sort of backed electric as the option, particularly at the level that we operate in, yes. In terms of cars, vans, probably trucks to a large extent also. Just talk us through that kind of understanding, that learning that you began there, and also then all the iterations, and obviously not into everyone, but what took you to back electric as a solution over other solutions?
It's a long answer to your question, but in summary, I'll try and make this in summary, is that I actually started my first hydrogen fuel cell business in almost 22 years ago. And I'd done this incredible research project at university on, again, looking at, you know, it was, is hydrogen the future to kind of sustainable energy, the bridge to sustainable energy? Because I discovered that you know, water is hydrogen and oxygen, H2O, and if you could electrolyze that, you split it up, you can turn water into, you know, hydrogen, which is effectively a fuel, water into fuel. Isn't that amazing? And if you power it by renewable energy, that's fantastic. And then you can reverse the process in a fuel cell, get that energy back, and it ends up combining with the oxygen again, and you end up with water. So I was like, wow, that is awesome. You know, that is brilliant. Like, surely that's the future. So I was also studying the evolution of industry at the time, which was really interesting as well. And I was like, well, okay, but how's this going to happen? It hasn't happened yet, and it needs to come to market, and how's it going to work? And so anyway, I just thought it was incredible. And I tried to give, again, a very summarized version. I tried to give this plan to the government in the UK to say, look, we've got to do this. It sounds amazing. I tried to give it to lots of people because I didn't think it was my role to do. Somebody else should do this. You know, this looks amazing. And, but no one would, it seemed to bother me more than other people. So eventually I was like, right, okay, I'm going to work this out somehow. Created a company, building an online marketplace to try and connect it all together. And I discovered that it can work, but it's very difficult and very inefficient. And on a very high level, that's basically not changed in 20 years. So yeah. It has got easier. It has got more efficient, but it hasn't got easy and it hasn't got efficient, you know? So, the thing about, The challenge about that is that even though you can extract water, you can extract hydrogen fuel from water, that process, how it's done today, you lose about 30% of the energy in electrolysis. You then need to compress that hydrogen, which doesn't like compressing very easily, to very, very high pressure using incredibly high, expensive materials. And if you then compress it to like massive, massive density, then you're going to lose about 20% of your energy to get anywhere near, you know, electric, let alone petrol, kind of levels of energy density. And so you're roughly, you've lost half of your energy in the first place. The best way to get the energy back is this thing called a fuel cell, which is effectively a reversive electrolyzer. It's roughly 50% efficient. And so then you lose another 25% overall. And you end up with 20 to 25% of the energy you had in the first place, which makes that original kilowatt hour from renewable energy very expensive. Mm. And the alternative is extracting that hydrogen from fossil fuels, which is much cheaper, but it doesn't solve the problem. And you still end up with carbon dioxide and everything back in the atmosphere. So I just kind of learned that it was possible. And there's a lot of complexity as well. Hydrogen leaks. You know, you mix hydrogen with oxygen and it can ignite in a pretty explosive way. So there's a lot of materials that are needed to sort of support that and prevent that happening. It escapes from basically anything because it's the smallest element. And it's just difficult. So if you try really, really, really hard, it's difficult. Fuel cells themselves are difficult. The catalysts, the membranes that kind of, you know, support the reaction, it corrode very easily. They're expensive. You don't get the kind of the warranties. So I just kind of like worked out in this journey of trying very, very hard, being incredibly persistent, that it was possible to make it work, but not in a way that could be commercially viable. And what I mean by commercially viable is not just how do we make it, you know, competitive with what we have today. You need to make it better. You know, you need to make it cheaper, ideally, better, cheaper, etc. And we were just never in the game. And so kind of bit by bit, people started realizing that it doesn't really work for height for cars because electric works really well. It doesn't work for this. People are still, you know, still saying, oh, it still works for trucks, but you know, we're about to demonstrate that electric works a lot better. As well. And I ended up, you know, in the process of, you know, that first project led into, you know, as I started realizing that this wasn't perhaps the answer that could be delivered, certainly in the timeframes we need, I started working closer on a kind of a wider picture. I started working with the United Nations. I started, you know, I went to the first COP event in 2008, COP14 in Poland was with the United Nations. And I was at Copenhagen, which was like the event before it was meant to be where we signed, you know, we talk about the Paris Agreement. It was meant to be the Copenhagen Agreement and it all fell apart. And it fell apart for lots of reasons. But the principal one I thought was that it was just a very expensive thing to do. And politicians, you know, generally wouldn't want to sign up for something, and people wouldn't want to sign up for something if it's a very expensive thing that's going to stress economies and make those economies uncompetitive. It's a hard basket problem to solve. And so I started thinking, look, okay, we just need to make this easier. We need to find solutions that can be delivered at scale, at pace, that can have a path that can be less expensive than petrol and diesel and gas and all the stuff that causes problems, and better. And so, you know, I tried 10 years. I tried for fuel cells and hydrogen. Just difficult, you know, like, whereas you get into solar, wow. You can leave these things outside for like 30 years and still give you a warranty. Like, I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is incredible. And electric vehicles, oh my goodness, they're brilliant. You know, like they're fun to drive. They're exciting. They've got all this tech, you know, music works. I discovered that as well. Charging is a bit difficult, but it doesn't have to be. It can be really easy. And then the same thing we're now applying. So we recently announced that we managed to secure a government grant from Innovate. Government being fantastic for us, and government gets a lot of bashing. You know, everyone gets a lot of bashing, don't they? Grid gets a lot of bashing. Government gets a lot of bashing. I think we should all do a lot less bashing and a lot more focus on what we need to get done together, working together, collectively. you know, government supported us with Braintree. You know, when I was, you know, given this idea of going, actually, I think in the future, mass market, we need these things called electric forecourts that serve lots of vehicles. And people were like going, oh my goodness, like, what kind of Kool-Aid is this guy drinking? I mean, they did. I had meetings with investors and they said things like, I had to create a model for Braintree that included an example of, because people said, but what if no one turns up to charge? Oh, come on, they will. But like, what if they don't? I'm like, oh gosh, coffee. We'll sell them coffee. You feel that? And they're like, oh, okay. And what about, so we created all these other business models. We had versions of electric forecourt business models that we had to prove that in a really, really conservative scenario where nobody turned up to charge, it still wouldn't be an absolute disaster. And so that was the challenge. And then Innovate was like, I like your plan. This sounds cool. And then we had this amazing, you know, Hitachi Capital now, Nabuna, you know, this amazing chap, Robert, you know, Robert, you came and, you know, believed in the vision, and Innovate supported it. And we built it. And you know what? People do turn up to charge, and it's incredible. And so now what we've done is I think Innovate liked that, and we liked that, and it was great. And I think that's probably the most famous charging project anywhere, pretty much. And it works really, really well. And that was helped with a government, you know, partnership. Now we're doing the same with heavy goods vehicles, the electric freightway project, where we're like, right, okay, you know, there's been enough discussion, enough debate, enough like opinions. Let's just do it. Let's just build a UK-wide charging network for electric heavy goods vehicles. Let's work it all out, and let's make it awesome. So that's the plan.
And that's what I love, because you know, you say that it was probably the best known project that's been done, the Braintree, you know, electric forecourt, but doesn't it serve all of the things that you were looking to do? So if I go to a charge point, you know, perhaps a little en route charge point that might be tucked in a bush somewhere with no lighting, no signage, no people to help me, all of that kind of stuff, I would be forgiven for thinking that this is a retrograde step, you know, in some respects, you know, I'm getting no help here. But what you've done is kind of all of the things that you've been talking about, making it easier, educating, kind of giving people an opportunity to come and learn, making it simpler, faster, all of those good things. The forecourts are really a bit of everything of that, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it was really, it's an opportunity to make it awesome. And that was the great thing. I mean, we when we started with the forecourts, we kind of like, initial thought was, can we just get a petrol station, don't you? And then you like add chargers, and then you start thinking, well, you know, but are they designed for people to spend, you know, half an hour or more? We didn't have no idea how long people would spend at the time, and what can they do there? And do you need more charging bays than you would at petrol stations? And we actually found ourselves, like, because the goal was awesome, we found ourselves like, you know, like tied up in just complexity. And then we worked with some, you know, incredible designers and, you know, people and so on. And it was just clear, it just made sense to say, okay, you know what, here's a blank sheet of paper. How do we make it awesome? What is it that we can do? You know, and that's what we did. Plus, with all the other, you know, revenue streams that we built in, we were actually very helpful. That investor feedback, even though they give us a lot of big hard time about charging, they really did make us think as well about, you know, we use batteries to balance the grid, you know, and you know, enhance revenue from the grid connection. We've got, you know, we've got a great relationship with Smiths, with Costa, with you know, M&S. We have a leasing, EV leasing business as well, GridServe car leasing, which we're now offering salary sacrifice as well. And that was to help the cars come. What if nobody turns up? We're like, we will help, you know, like, we're going to work that out as well. And we designed it in a way that, you know, it hopefully just kind of gives people confidence. And yes. Actually the first person to ever charge, it was really funny. So I got a call one day, and I was told, oh, by the way, we've had our first customer. And I was like, but we're not even open. And they were like, yeah, we kind of know. And then, they looked, and basically, so, you know, the team were practicing, for opening, and it was a very difficult time. It was December. So it was COVID, you know, like period. We were kind of just between lockdowns. And they looked out, and there was a guy standing out there charging his car. And we were like, this is interesting. So they kind of walked up to him and said, hello. And he's like, hi, how are you doing? I was thinking, it looked like it was kind of open. And they were like, right. And this is a chap who had to kind of go past the bollards and move, you know, to kind of get in. And they were like, so what are you, interesting to meet you. What are you up to? And he said, well, basically, I live in the area. I can't charge at home. I thought, it doesn't matter anymore because you're building this thing. So I've gone and bought myself an electric car. I just figured I need to turn up and charge it.
They will come.
It works. And then the extra really funny thing was called, and he would say, so what's your name? And he went, I'm called Brian, which was a very funny one for me because Brian was my father's name, and that is exactly what he would have done.
Wow. One of the things that we don't talk about very often, but I've seen firsthand, is your ability to inspire your people, the grid servers, of whom there are, what's the number now, Toddington? You've got a great number of people that work in the team.
Around 300.
They are almost, it's an incredible experience to be with your people because they all get your vision. They all get your practicality. They all understand what it is they're there to do. And they do it in exactly the way you speak, which is with enthusiasm, with knowledge, with passion. They just go and get on with it. How do you motivate 300 people to consistently deliver your vision? Because you're one of the very few leaders I've ever seen who does that.
I think everyone's quite clear about the why, why we do what we do. I think that's really important to kind of understand, GridServe's purpose is to deliver sustainable energy and move the needle on climate change. And so we know why, the how is actually more complex. And whilst we achieve a lot and have achieved a huge amount as a business, there's so much more to do. And it's been incredibly educational for me as well. I've never built a business as large as GridServe before. And we're really only just starting, our whole platform, our business is designed because our goal is moving the needle on climate change. And because the challenge is effectively, how do we reduce global emissions by 43% by 2030? What's very clear is that the world does not have the time to reinvent the sun to wheel, and do it. And so what we're trying to work out now is how we can use what we've created and understood and the learning to kind of deliver really significant scale in other territories and with other partners to really maximize the success of everyone who, we partner with, we work with, because again, that's what's kind of needed. And there's a lot, there's just a lot to that, like a business that starts at, with a few people is really easy. When you get to 30 or 50 people and you do see each other around the coffee machine, it's quite straightforward. When you get to 100 people and you're in a kind of COVID scenario, it gets more tricky. When you hire a lot of people over COVID and, throughout the period and they all live in different places, it's more complex. When you get to 300, it's a different game altogether. Mm. So we're absolutely looking at how we can kind of, put in place additional structures and efficiencies. And there's a lot of things that we want to and need to improve, which we're absolutely working on. And actually really excited about doing, because, the next phase is going to be, like we've done a lot, but we haven't moved the needle. And the next phase, we need to really kind of work out how we can bring our teams together in just a brilliant way, as a group of 300, and where we go from here, how we can become better aligned, how we can kind of, not just understand the why, the purpose, but, how do we all push in the same direction? Mm. And how do we make this business, a really straightforward and fun place to be? And, there's a lot of amazing things, but there's a lot we could do better. And we're certainly working on that. And it's a really exciting journey. But again, because we have a very clear purpose, when you get to situations that you are just, a little bit frustrated and it's just been a bit, because we all have challenging days, at least you can kind of go, well, we're giving it a damn good go.
I think that one of the headlines that I'm going to try and take from this is that Torrington Harper is truly a force of nature. And that sun to wheel thing is a force of nature. You are a force of nature. And combined, you are saving nature. You're an incredible, incredible man with a brilliant, brilliant business. And I left the conference that I was lucky enough to be involved with literally exhausted, but with goosebumps because of the energy that was in that room. You are a legend in my book. Thank you so much for today and everything you have done to get to this point. It's the future that now really excites me.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. I do. I would also say that we've just got such amazing people in the business as well. I may have you know vision and I may be able to inspire, and I'm so delighted that people came, you know, with me on this journey, but my goodness, they're awesome as well. So, you, and I don't take anything away. I really appreciate that. I also want to give a massive shout out to the grid servers and, you know, and maybe there's other people out there that want to come and join us.
We'll set up a recruitment hotline afterwards. But I mean, Tollington, the thing is, it is inspirational. It is an amazing organization. And many people that we've known throughout the time that we've been doing the EV Cafe and perhaps even before are people that have signaled their intention. There's one in my mind, I won't name for obvious reasons, but they signaled their intention. They wanted to be a part of the grid surf journey. And it was probably 2 years from the first time they said it to when they got the job. And I know that they were constantly just really kind of like, grid surf, that's the place to go. And I think, you know, you'll have many, many more people. It is inspirational. Your single-mindedness is just so impressive. And I think that's the thing, looking back at what your granny said, you are doing everything in capital letters. And it just felt as you were articulating the why, the urgency, the evolution of the how, it was all in capital letters. These are the definites. These are the non-negotiables. And we don't care what anybody else does. We've got our mission to move the needle on climate change. And we will play our part for the fish in the background. And for the people in the foreground, you know, the Rosamond spoke so powerfully. It's yesterday in our time, but obviously as people back at the Transport and Energy Conference, she spoke so powerfully of her daughter, Ella. And, you know, you're so right. That lockdown period where everything changed and we all remarked on it within a number of days. This is the sky felt clearer. And it just happened to be sunny at the time and all of that good stuff. But everything felt just better. And that's the future that you're building with GridServe, but also independently as a lobbyist and as a voice in our industry to drive that change. And I love that picture of your granny in capital letters.
What's really interesting is that GridServe is in capital letters.
Yeah.
So every time now I see that, I'm going to think of your granny.
That's interesting.
We are grateful to your granny, but also to your mum and your dad.
Your mum is such an absolute wonder. She's so proud of her boys.
She's a superstar.
But great. Listen, Tollington, it has been so good of you to share so openly, right from how you were named, but also that engine room that is in your mind and your heart that drives you and this wonderful organization called GridServe. And we really appreciate a door into that world today. And, you know, I know that many, many people will be inspired. Follow Tollington on LinkedIn and reach out via the website. Go to the GridServe website and obviously go and see Braintree. And one will be down the road in Stevenage, down the road for me, in Stevenage in the not too distant future. There's one up in Norfolk, in Norwich. And
Gatwick's coming to go, so hopefully next month.
There we go. So there'll be many opportunities. Now, whether you drive an electric vehicle or you don't, many, many people turn up at Braintree or did turn up at Braintree that have never driven an electric vehicle thinking, what is all this fuss about? Go and see how easy it can be. Go and see and understand this sun-to-wheel mindset at those sites, but also be confident that as you travel up and down the motorway service network, that there are many, many charge points from Gridserve and others, to be fair, up and down this important highway. And we look forward very much to the electric freightway coming to life as well. That is exciting. And we'll talk to you about that on another day. But for now, Toddington, thank you so much for your candor, for your openness, and for all that you've given us today in terms of inspiration. So thank you very much.
Thank you. All the best, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody. And check out the evcafe.org for many more podcasts in a similar vein. And be inspired not only by this one, but by many others too. Have a great day, everybody.